Anyway, so the airline said, gee, really what we want is something that's going to cover for a period of time. So we're facing something called a minimum revenue guarantee. We have been, since this conference in June, working on a pledge basis, and I'm not here to pitch anything, but I'm saying this is part of that component. We're now at 1.2 million, we're about $500,000 that's already been pledged. And it's growing with each passing day. But this is going to be augmented with a federal grant that is specific for communities such as us to be able to develop sustainable service. And what this does is give us something to talk about with the airlines in terms of this is a community that has legs to it in the future. And what we're really talking about, again, is sustainability. We saw a decade ago, Delta came in, Delta went out. The day that Delta crashed Salem, they crashed 20 cities. You know, there's a certain capriciousness of time. We're in a much different time, and while we can talk about past, we really say, what are we going to learn from it, and where are we today? So this is a question we have posed, and this is a question that we are surmounting with an answer that is realistic. You have in your packet the current piece that we're using with potential pledges, but really what it talks about most of all, if you look at the bottom, is process. And it's like a computer program stepwise. You follow a process, and you've got a higher degree of success than if you're undisciplined. And discipline is very much a part of our marketplace. The second question is, and this goes back to sustainability and habits, is to keep planes full, is the market willing to pay a premium, something more? And we've looked at this and say, probably it's about $40 per ticket. But when you start looking at the offsets, and we talked about the offsets a few minutes ago, the pain that we've all faced and continue to face going to PDX, and also some of the things that, frankly, are beyond just the pain of it's going to cost me more in terms of a ticket, is those tangible offsets, parking, driving, hotel stays, maybe missing a flight, and I've missed flights, and my time here is probably significantly less than many of the people in this room. It's not a good thing. So the $40 is not, it's not a big deal for most. One of the things also that's come, Tim Hay, who a number of you may know, having been on the advisory board in the past, regularly does a great deal of entertaining, and ends up entertaining at PDX rather than Salem because there are no flights here. And you look at the loss of income to our community, and he's not, and I've talked to quite a few, not the only one. One of the nice things about dollars that come into a market, particularly leisure dollars, or dollars attached to hospitality, is how sticky they are. They don't go anywhere. And the leverage on those dollars can be, with $1 spent, 3 times, 5 times, 8 times. So you're losing a significant amount of income to a market. So as we look at this and the question of cost, there are costs that are human factor costs, there are direct costs, obviously, but there's some intangibles that probably we haven't even looked at and that we are becoming educated to. The third question is to keep things full. I mean, we're talking to the business community. Will you direct, will you encourage your business travelers to use flights, even if early on it means a connection? And that's one of the things that, as we're moving forward, we're saying, and we did a second study, and we'll talk about that in a moment, is where is potential service going to go and who it might be. So direct your attention now to where we've been, but more important, what our go-forwards are, where we're going. Done, we've already invested in the sophisticated catchment study that we've also shared with collegially with the city. They've seen it. We invested $15,000 just from donations. We've done a series of conversations, including one with the city, with Mayor Bennett, with Steve Powers, your city manager, with Christian, community development, and with John, as to what the game plan could be and how we can all work together in an opportunity. The response was, I think, very encouraging. On the 3rd and 17th of April, we had a series of lunch meetings at Roth's over in West Salem for community people looking at the larger valley, sharing ideas, the dialogue, the front and back that you always want when you're making momentous decisions, which moved the project forward from an ad hoc to a more formalized structure, an organized group with a direction, goal setting, and expectations. We moved and had another study done by Valair with an additional $5,000 when we passed the bag around. And it was specifically looking at the market in terms of the forwards, where service might go, and who might be prospects. Service primarily came to three markets, both destination as well as origin. SFO in San Francisco, Seattle, and Denver. But as we've been honing this further, it's primarily looking at San Francisco and Denver because of the hubs, the type of connections, and the appetite. One of the things that I'm finding out, and it's not really a surprise, is that you're not going to change necessarily the strategy of the airlines. You're going to have to fit into their strategy. So then you're starting to say, okay, who's going to kind of fit into this? Well, the legacy carriers are the strongest opportunity. Alaska, United, American, and Delta. But those first two are primary. And not surprisingly, all four, but particularly those two, have heavy agreements with SkyWest because SkyWest flies their brands. And this makes where we are quite attractive because of PDX and who's going in and who's going out and where they're going. So we committed another study. We have moved forward further. On the 11th of June, we had an all-city conference at the convention center. We had about 300 people for lunch. It wasn't a rubber chicken lunch. As is so often the case, and Jack Penny made this comment subsequently, and he gave a very strong presentation to our community about prospects and opportunities. He said, I have never seen people willing to pay $20 a head to hear a presentation, which speaks to our market. And these are people who were not just here in Salem, but a fair number coming from some distance, Corvallis, even from the coast, who wanted to hear what this might mean to the mid-market. It was sponsored by CEDCOR, Travel Salem, the Salem Chamber of Commerce, and the City Club. Subsequent, we sat down and said, okay, what do we know from this? And as I mentioned early on, we used these little devices because we asked a series of questions, three that we did or expansion of that, to get a quick read. The read was overwhelmingly positive that service was something that people really wanted. The question is, how are we going to get it? So we've moved since that meeting to evaluating, decision to move forward, and to look at what this process means. And you see the process again on the sheet I shared with you. But what we're really talking about is a campaign. And what we're competing with is not necessarily the business to get airlines in, because if there's a market, they will come. But we're competing against other communities such as ours who really want to have service. And what it told us was waiting was not a good idea. The now and the strike makes a great deal of difference in if we're going to get the type of service that we want in the time. So if we're saying, where are we, and we're already moving along with this, is potentially we can have service in January of 2020. Not too far away. A year and a half. And we're comparing this to other communities that have garnered service, what the process has been, what the headwinds have been. No matter what you do in life, nothing is ever easy and has value, but you can make it a lot easier, particularly if you understand the headwinds and what to do to answer questions and to be able to put together a plan that is executable. So what I'd like to be able to do, and I think this is the venue, is questions. I'll answer as many as I can. There are many questions that are still in process. But we have a unique opportunity. There is a nowness to that opportunity. There is tangible support to see that we can execute and see that we have sustainable service that is for the Mid-Willamette Valley. And it is significant. So I appreciate your time, but I'm here with all ears and questions, some of which I'll be able to answer, some of which I'll say I'll have to defer because they're still in process.
Okay, what questions do we have? Neil, well, you have like 15, don't you?
Yeah, I have a burning question. I am all in favor of commercial air service to Salem. Having said that, one of the things that I have to wonder about is that regional carriers all over the United States are canceling flights because they don't have the pilots to service the routes that currently exist. Mm-hmm. So if the airlines can't provide the service that they already have routes for, then going in at this time and asking for yet another route seems like a terribly huge problem.
There are headwinds, and we have looked at those studies. You're well aware of it. But one of the things that we've concluded, particularly chatting with a bit with the industry, is that if you provide a market, they'll provide the planes and they'll provide the pilots. We have a market that is one that has significant value, I think particularly to Alaska. We're only now moving toward the conversation process. One of the things that's intriguing, particularly with SkyWest, is they put together some very interesting programs to be able to satisfy pilots for the routes they're flying with the legacy carriers. But is it something in the future? Yeah. But we're convinced, and we've been encouraged, that if you have a market, it is sustainable. And part of that sustainability is seeing the money put forward, again, in terms of the MRG. Then they will come in, and the pilots are found, and the planes will be found. And the planes are changing right now, too. That's the other side of it. I'm sure John could probably speak more to that, too, as well.
Mr. Harrison, on your presentation up here, you talked about different businesses. For instance, the state of Oregon being the capital. Do you have any numbers on the amount of travelers from state agencies that go to PDX, say each day or each month?
We're in the process of garnering that information from the agencies that have travelers. But one of the things I found, and again, is a reflection in coming in, it does reflect in terms of the business of state government, is that historically, good times, bad times, capitals seem to hum along very quietly. They never seem to go as high, they didn't seem to go as low. But the traveling public of the state, if you provide the right destinations and the right connections, they will move.
You had mentioned on the screen there people staying up in Portland with a hotel room prior to their flight, $150 a night. I think personally, as a aircraft owner and hangar owner here at the airport, I would like to see a hotel built here close to the airport. My opinion is there's a couple of vacant buildings over here in Norback and the one on the corner that I think would be an excellent location for the business community over here off of Fairview Industrial to have meeting rooms at that hotel. Plus, people can go right from the hotel to here. You'll pick up additional parking at those hotels all over. And one other point I was looking at is just to the north, take it back to the west of that property, is an Amtrak track. Why couldn't the station be put in there for people just to drop off and go to the airport? You bring them up from Albany, you bring them up from Eugene, you bring them down from Portland. What a neat idea to have that location, those hotels, business community operating there. And it won't take away from the downtown hotels, but it's a beautiful location. And I think it would really help the airport. And that's...
As the business is developed, it would not surprise me that you'll have some sort of development. I'm sure Chris can speak more to that as well. Historically, hotels that are adjacent to good fields do extraordinarily well. Normally, they're one or two night stays, some conferencing, but it's part of a healthy business climate, and that would be nice. In terms of Amtrak, that's going to be further down the pike, but I'm sure that these sorts of opportunities, if they're viable, certainly could be evaluated.
As far as a hotel goes, how many employees do they have at, say, a hotel that has 100, 120 rooms, say, in the Portland area? Is that a number that you folks have gardened up for thoughts of being supported?
It's my understanding that a hotel that has 150 rooms will have a staff of around 40 people.
No? Okay.
Okay, do we have other questions?
You've talked about the group that's become a bit more formal now, that's kind of leading this work. What can you tell us more, both about your own background and about who's part of that group?
And my background is in publishing internationally. The background of the people generally who are involved with this are people who are in the auto industry, that are in the hotel industry, that are in real estate industry. In manufacturing, including manufacturing on the agriculture side, there is a cross-section. This is a background of the pledges between $5,000 and $50,000.
And that group, how is it organized? You said it's become more formal. Is it
more formal? It is more formal insofar as it was a talking group last fall. Now it's an action group.
You mentioned the additional cost of a ticket being $40. That's one hut ticket, isn't it?
I'm sorry? Well,
that's less than a hut ticket.
Less than a hut ticket?
Yeah. And I've had people, and in terms of conversations, people say about what's going to happen to the people who are in the transportation business, PDX, and intuitively, their business could actually improve because of people coming here and people who still will be going to PDX. So you'll have a through business. It'll evolve as a result of having a regional airport.
Right.
Am I reading this correctly, that when you're talking about this revenue guarantee, minimum revenue guarantee, you're getting pledges from the community, businesses, things like
yes.
that, and then there's a matching thing, and I read this and it implies like a 3-to-1 match ratio of, am I reading that correctly or is that not?
Okay. The federal grants range from $500,000 and $750,000.
Okay.
The pledge is activated when the grant is not fully sucked up. So in other words, you have a percentage between the federal grant and how it's accessed and how the pledges are are called. There are some markets where neither one, one is San Luis Obispo, where the pledges, you know, have not really been called. They may be called in terms of later service, but there are certain markets as they evolve that the pledges are never touched. There's always a risk, though. I mean, to minimize and say, you know, that there is no risk to the pledge money would be unfair.
No, I guess I guess where I was coming at it from was more of trying to figure out what's the threshold, like what's the dollar amount that we would need to raise.
We're going to raise 1.2, and right now we're about $500,000 already. Okay.
So if I could add a little bit, I'm familiar with what's called the SCASD grant. It's a federal Department of Transportation grant. It stands for Small Community Air Service Development Grants. And they're exactly for that type of purpose. One of the things that makes that grant application more attractive for the larger dollars is exactly what these folks are doing. They've got a formal group, they've got community support, they've got dollars in the pot. And so as you go through the application process, that's a lot of what the federal government wants to see. They've got a serious program going forward here, and that tends to trigger the higher dollars. The $750,000 isn't guaranteed. It could be $500, it could be $600. But in my experience, the communities that are doing it the way we are tend to be able to get those larger dollars. So the way I'm reading this is that the SCASD grant, along with the community grant money, mm-hmm. you're shooting for $1.2 million, but it could certainly be $1.5 or $1.6 or whatever.
And the $1.2 is what we're looking from the pledge side, so that the $750 or the $5 would augment that. So you're looking at something that could be approaching $2 million. And John is absolutely correct, is that when airlines look and they want sustainable business, they say, what is the community willing to do to support? And
that also includes in-kind matches, the type of fee waivers that yes. we would offer, those sorts of things, all have dollar
yes.
value. So you put all of that into your grant application and you get that final dollar figure. And that's what federal government is.
And Valera is going to work with us on the various grants. With their experience, they know what's current. We're a very interesting period of time. The 2018 grants have not gone out. There have been some holdups for a variety of reasons in Washington. So what we're looking to do is have our app in October. And therefore, the more rapid we can put together the funds, then we're in a much better position when they put the 2019s together. So it's actually worked out rather well for us to sequence, to sync what we're raising in terms of pledging and what we'll do in terms of grants.
I assume that you've got 2020 hindsight to look at what the reasons are that Delta left, so that you can address that so it doesn't happen a second time?
Delta left for a variety of reasons. One, the economy was going to the tank in 2008.
Right.
But they were also facing, as a number of the airlines, that they'd gotten themselves in advance contracts on gas. And the gas got extraordinarily expensive, particularly for the type of planes that they were flying at the time. And again, when Delta cut Salem, they cut 20 cities the same day. So it wasn't just Salem. And Salem was reasonably successful. They were filling, on average, about 63% in that early period. It was weighted toward some of the summer travel. But what really faced Delta was they were facing headwinds in the market. So a number of things, I think, are in our favor now. We have a more robust economy. You can't count on that forever. But again, looking at capitals and capital markets, we're also looking at some opportunities in terms of destination travel that weren't there previously. But one of the things that really has been an outgrowth is the type of business that has come into the Mid-Valley. And our trading area basically is going to be within about half an hour of this airport. And it goes down to Albany. I was chatting with the ED for the Albany Chamber. You know, we're talking just about this. It takes people in Albany 40 minutes to go to Eugene and 20 minutes to come to Salem. And I think that the question will always be the willingness of a market to pay more. But really, it's going to come back to an informed decision that people will make, largely the people in business, and this makes this market very attractive. But yes, we have to look in hindsight. Spencer?
For those of you who don't know me, my name is Spencer Carroll. I'm an attorney with an office here at the field in the Salem Air Center, and one of my specialties is aviation law. I hate driving to PDX, so this is a passion of mine, and I'm on this committee with Brett that is working behind the scenes. I wanted to point out a couple of things for those of you who weren't at Jack Penning's lunch. Brett showed us a lot of really great numbers and statistics at the beginning of the presentation, but to compare them to the other cities that have done this. So Jack Penning and Volare, this is what they do. They go around the country and help airports bring commercial air service in. They help bring additional air service and routes in. This is what they do. And in addition to Jack Penning's comment about the unprecedented number of people who attended that meeting and paid for it, he compared the data that Brett showed us earlier to other cities by saying, look, your catchment area is so big and you have so many people flying out of Salem. You only need about 10% of that business in order for the numbers to work for airlines here. In other cities where they've been successful in bringing commercial air service in, they needed like 40 or 50% of the flight business that was leaving that town. So he showed us a lot of raw numbers, but comparatively speaking, they're incredibly supportive of commercial air service here. Another thing I wanted to add is, in addition to the federal grants and the private money that's being garnered, we're also going to be writing a state grant. Travel Salem is helping us with that, and they are working on the marketing portion of that grant ask, and they are detailing out how the money will be spent to make sure that the advertising is proper for this commercial air service moving forward. Because we all know, at the end of the day, when you're going to go fly, you get on your computer and you see what flights are available. So a lot of that money needs to be spent properly to make sure that this air service works once and if it gets here. And I think that's all I wanted to say.
Well, adding on,
is that the Volare grant?
Yeah.
Adding to Spencer's comment is that we're doing budgets now that will be 30 to 36 months out. So if you look at the period garnering service, and then you're looking at the service, you know, what's going to cost to support it. One of the things that John, Neil asked about, you know, looking at hindsight, one of the things that was a foible for the Delta service is, and it goes back to the collegial marketing, both Delta's and, you know, what was here in the city at the time, was that people went to Salt Lake, but Delta did a miserable job of saying, this is a connection, where you can go. One of the focus areas that we're attending to is looking at routes and looking at the lines, is looking at connections, how long someone may have to wait. And of course, this is something that changes, but our mindset is to work on the availability, but also working on habits, is we're going to have to market to habits that are not necessarily good ones. And we're going to have to change some habits where people say, gee, not only is this physically closer to get to, and again, you're looking at the majority of within about a half an hour of this field, but when I get to wherever I get, how long do I have to wait to get to where I want to go? So that's one of the reasons Seattle and San Francisco are very attractive, because of the number of flights, hub flights, and the strength of both of those carriers in those markets. But, Neil, it's again, as you're looking at past, Spencer, you know, we're looking at the past, but we're really looking very much at the future. And this is where I'm working with Travel Salem, particularly looking at the marketing. The marketing to get the service, but the marketing to be able to work on habits to ensure that the market knows, you know, what we're offering. And at the initial people that are coming in, it's just starting to scratch the surface. And one of the things I saw in Sonoma County is that there was an absence after 2008, when everything crashed, of 5 years. But now, when Alaska went into Sonoma County, right behind it, when they saw that there was traction, was United, an American, an Allegiant. And Allegiant, you know, is a nice carrier, but it's had a history of kind of in and out. they'll go to market and they'll also go out. So our focus is very much on the legacy carriers that have the legs to be able to, if the market's sustainable, that they're in for the long haul. I know I've taken a fair amount of your time. Art?
I have a comment. The thing that really intrigues me is the airport. I was on the Airport Advisory Commission here in Salem in the 1990s. But one of the things that I think would might be a marvelous use, additional use for the airport is looking at the local education facilities and saying, is there a community college around here or one of the universities that is looking and would consider aircraft aviation training? That is an incredible, what they're looking down the road, they can't even get their arms around the numbers. Just as one thing, how the pilot, the desperation is getting so thick. The United States Air Force just went and brought 1,000 pilots that had left. They brought them back on duty. They don't have the depth. The airlines is the very same thing. You do that here in Salem, what you're looking at for the commercial air service, your airport here not only would be looked as a commercial transport, but also as a regional education facility. And that would add a whole new dimension of businesses looking at your airport who might be looking for pilots, and where would they come from? And pilots right now, they are, some of these facilities, they are paying their people, their employees, to go to a location and to get that aviation training. And that is a brand new market, and it's a new way of airports to be used. And they're looking at regional facilities just like this. And looking at Salem as being an educational facility and a commercial air transport facility, I think is something that is truly profound. And for to me, it's an economic definite bang for the buck for your organization.
That's an excellent point. And I'll throw in that we're actually working on a strategic business plan for the airport now, and that's going to be a key piece of that. We've actually had meetings with the Salem-Kaiser School District, with SeaTech here in town. One talked about expansion of facilities out here.
Yes.
To do not just pilot training, but AMP, mechanic,
absolutely,
all of that aviation.
Absolutely.
Background.
It also speaks to healthy airports and communities make business in those communities even healthier. The boats all rise. And again, as we look at this, this is a mid-Willamette Valley project. I have a number of meetings with some accountants and attorneys where their clients looking at investment. This makes a lot of sense for investment when Portland is tough. In other areas, frankly, don't make the compelling opportunity that we have here.
Airlines are starting to look at communities different also. I don't know if anybody here has ever been to the Mount Angel Oktoberfest, but one of their corporate sponsors is Lufthansa Airlines. They write the city of Mount Angel, a town of 3,600 people, they write them a check every single year, and they don't have a runway.
Kristen, you're going to say something?
Yeah, I did have a question as to follow up to your comments about the Door Grant and Fortune of Travel Salem on that. My understanding is that the city needs to be the applicant or co-applicant on that grant. Is that your understanding as well?
I haven't read the fine print. Typically,
yes.
It's a public
so,
entity.
So I just want to make sure that we are coordinating on that, because we will need to have council action on it before it can be submitted. We want to line all of that up to be submitted in an October timeframe. Are you looking at doing the two grants consecutively, submitting them at the same time?
If it can be done, yes. Because much of the work to do one grant, as you probably look at those apps, is in the other. So we're trying to coordinate three things at once. Not easy. That is the funding, the combination of the pledges and the funds, but also working with one or more airlines. We're planning to be at some of the conferences in the fall, and we want to be in a position that we can start courting. We're already courting now, quietly, but we want to be able to directly say, you have a community that's putting their money where their mouth is.
And ideally, you'd have the Roar Grant in place so that on your list of matches, you can plug that in there too.
So it would be nice to take both of those to council, possibly at our second August meeting, so that path is clear.
And that was one of the reasons that when I talked to Bob about getting letters of encouragement from this group, and also working on letters of encouragement from the Mid-Willamette Valley, that says this is something that's needed, and we are supportive of Salem being the apex of this.
Thank you. And we don't need a completed application to take it to council. It's just a resolution authorizing us to be a co-applicant.
Yes.
Yeah, Doug, could you show the motion that we're working on and present this to the...
Before you do that, though, let me be a stickler for the rules, like I always am. Public meeting law states that we have to notice if there's going to be any action taken by this commission tonight. It's not noticed on here under action items. So what I might suggest is that you table that decision. Maybe we put together a special meeting in the next few days or week or two so that we can notice it properly. Maybe in the interim, you can talk maybe under items for commission discussion what the content of that letter might be. I can certainly help draft it or whatever the commission wants to do, but I don't want to step on public meeting laws.
Yeah, so that is an issue, but there's another way that we could address it as well, and that would be to submit individual letters as yourself, who is also a member of the commission, rather than having it be an action item of the commission. And then the other way to address it is that in the staff report that we take forward, we can also mention that the discussion at this last meeting was supportive without you having taken a formal action on it.
So the individual letters would precede a formal action with appropriate notice.
As the chairman, you can call special meetings anytime, day, night.
Well, I'm confused that we can't have a motion of any kind without having some kind of notice of a motion first.
You have to notice the public if there's going to be an action taken on a board or a commission. So when we asked a couple of weeks ago and you indicated that Brett wanted to do a presentation, there was no indication that there would be an action item. So we have none under action items. So we have to notice the public if there's going to be an action item taken. So we can't do ad hoc motions, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay, and then how much time do we need to have notice before we can have another meeting?
24, 48 hours. What's the notification period? In my reports, I will introduce Darcy Palmer, our new office assistant. I'm looking to her. She probably doesn't know because she's new. I believe it's 48 hours. I think it's 48-hour notice.
So then,
we typically post in a week.
Then we could have a meeting on Friday.
No, because I wouldn't be able to get it posted until tomorrow, and that would be for Saturday. So I would recommend if you ever release, you probably could do it the early next week if you get a notification out. You have to prepare an agenda. Send it to be published on the city's website, all those sorts of things. That takes a little bit of time.
I think that'd be the best way to go. I have a meeting on Monday.
Is everybody here available to meet on Monday?
It doesn't have to be at 6 at night. Call it at noon if everybody's available, or whatever time works with the board. But I just want to make sure we keep it all. If
you don't know.
It's a violation of the public meeting law. If it pleases the chair, I could send out an email tomorrow to the folks that aren't here tonight to see if what works in their schedule. There's a number of folks that are available.
Because we want to do it as soon as we can. There's no reason to delay it.
I mean, ultimately, what's the next city council meeting? We're looking at early August.
We likely wouldn't take this until the second meeting in August, which is the 27th.
So we've got some time yet. So whatever motion would be made in any future meeting or any individual letters that are sent, they wouldn't make it to council until... Off the top of my head, but
2 weeks before the meeting.
2 weeks prior to the second meeting in August, which is probably the second week of August.
Around submitting packets and everything in around the 13th of August.
So whether you did it tomorrow, whether you did it 2 weeks from now, it's not going to change when the city council is going to read all of this letter of support, I guess is my point. So if you'd like to take the time to set up a special meeting in the next few days or a week or two. Time if folks want to prepare special letters, we can add that to the package as well. We've got some time.
Can we take a quorum for the people that are here to see who's available next week?
I mean, there's
what dates?
There's more than a quorum with the five of us here right now, so if almost all of us can agree on a time, then we can check with Brian and Marianne later. But if at least four of us agree on a time now, we can have a meeting. So starting with Monday, is there a day that we're all here? And it could be any time, doesn't have to be at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, special meetings can be called in. Discretion of the chair.
I'm good.
Monday's okay.
I'm available on Monday. Yeah.
If we do Monday, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You're okay?
Mondays, yeah.
Well, we're all...
Are you thinking daytime or evening?
Monday's okay. What does everybody prefer for a time? It's easier for you if you do it during the day.
Daytime, I do. It have to be in the afternoon because my schedule's pretty busy in the morning. I have to be after work. Okay. So
sometime Monday afternoon, what's good with everybody?
My calendar's kind of open, so 4 or 8 p.m.
Your calendar shuts down.
And John's buying lunch, right?
That's right.
I'm available. I'm open. I can flex. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday is best, but anytime Monday.
How about like 2 o'clock on Monday? Is that okay with everybody?
No, for me.
That's okay?
No.
It's not. What time on Monday is good for you?
1 or 4 or any time after 4.
Okay, how about 1 o'clock on Monday? Does that work?
Not for me, unfortunately. 4 is good.
4 o'clock? How about 4 o'clock Monday?
4 is good.
Okay. I feel like I'm trying to bid something here. Okay.
So in fact, you and I have a meeting that goes until 2:30-ish or 3 here at the city manager's. So, yeah, 4 o'clock would be better.
4 o'clock works for everybody? Okay, then let's do that. Let's have our meeting at 4 o'clock.
So we'll put an agenda together tomorrow. I'll send it to you and I for review, make sure it has what we want on it, the right type of language, action items, and so forth. And
23 July.
Just be a one item agenda then.
Are we still doing questions? We kind of drifted into this, but I still had another.
We can go back to questions when we get this. Yeah.
Sorry, Brett, we had to work out our points of order here. To try and keep everything on the straight.
That's fine.
Okay, so we're all set on the Monday at 4 o'clock. Okay, so we got that part done. Now we're back to questions you want to ask.
Yeah, you have some predictions about flight numbers and growth and how you would expect that to pan out. You said starting beginning of 2020.
Well, I think two things to come into this, and it also follows on some of Spencer's comments. To make this work, we only need about 10% of the 1.1 million. So therefore, when you look at the two probables, which are either Seattle or San Francisco, then you're looking probably of somewhere around 4 flights a day.
So 2 morning, 2 evening,
yeah.
From 1 hour.
And again, it has to fit in, obviously. And one of the comments we made is that, and this is a bit of a throwback, yet for us it may work very well, is that Salem is between Seattle and San Francisco. So you could have flights that go from San Francisco Salem, and then go on to Seattle. So you might be able to work something that we end up getting both cities as part of whatever program that we work. And it's going to fit very much into what the strategy is, either one of those major carriers, but also where we are with where we are SkyWest. Mm-hmm. And the big thing is connections. But historically, they want early morning flight, in those late afternoons. That's how it's going to fit with the connections.
And then you sort of said it's normally a 2-year process to get stable and everything settled in before those guarantees kind of expire. Is that, if it stayed at 4 flights a day through that whole period, would that be considered something that would be maintained?
Well, I think it goes back to it's sustainability. One, the carrier has to stay, clearly, but they have to make a profit. Mm-hmm. And the profitability really goes back to the cities, the hubs, and those connections. But our early conversations among ourselves and certainly Jack's district is that this is a sustainable marketplace. I mean, your trading area is 579,000. You have 1.1 million passengers in, but your trading area in those four counties in what we'd be looking at 579,000, which is more than ample to be able to lure people into making that decision that I really don't want to go to PDX or I don't want to go to Eugene. And one of the things that certainly we're going to work on, and it goes back to marketing, is obviously we'll be spending money on marketing before it happens, but we're really going to have a strong dose. And using social networking, all the tools that weren't available when Neil asked about the past, that are there today. And also working with strongly with the business community for them to encourage their travelers to use this service. So it's not just a service that's going to serve the winter birds who fly south, but really the business travelers coming in and going out. Certainly the base that we have now.
So for the tourism industry or for those business travelers, is the goal that in 2 years or 5 years you'd be at 10 flights a day or still at 4 flights a day?
We believe that this airport, as it indicated, could support 15 in outs a day. Shoals, which does not have the infrastructure you have here, is now at 22.
Yeah.
And that was a growth period of about 5 years.
And Shoals as well?
Shoals is in Sonoma County.
Okay.
And primarily it's servicing the wine industry and tourism.
Thank
and
you.
We haven't even scratched the surface up here yet.
Okay, any more questions about this?
Not
a word. All right, so we can move on to our other reports.
You're certainly welcome to stay if you like, but one of the things we move presentations up is the folks have better things to do than listen to me prattle on.
Okay, so our next report would be the Tower Chief report, and John's going to do
that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I do that, I'd just like to remind all of our guests, we do have a sign-in sheet. I don't know if everybody saw it on the way in, but if you could sign even on your way out, just so we have for the record who was in attendance. I appreciate that. Rob wasn't able to make it tonight. He did ask me just to give the operations counsel. He didn't have any other specific tower updates. But I do have for the 6 months ending June, in terms of operations, we're at 21,129. By way of comparison over last year, that's plus 3,745 over last year, or 21%. So if the second half of the year is anything like the first half of the year, we'll break 40,000 in operations at this airport for the first time since 2010. So we're definitely swinging in the right direction. Certainly 3 days of runway closure doesn't help, but it doesn't hurt bad either. So that is all I have in terms of operations. I would also point out, I do believe that it's now October that the GPS approach for runway 13 will be published. It was originally scheduled for July, but I think because we have our ILS off for the runway project, they wanted to wait to publish that till after the project was complete. So that was the last update I received in October for that. So that's been 3 or 4 years in the making, so we're almost there. That's it for the Tower Chief report. For my own report, I would like to introduce Darcy Palmer. She is our new office assistant, and like with Connie, she works half-time down at Urban Development in the morning and half-time at the airport in the afternoon. So this is 5/7 of the Advisory Commission. This is her first Airport Advisory Commission meeting. She does support some other boards and commissions downtown. So, but anyway, welcome Darcy, and some of you have met her already. But she's our go-to person now for all things ministry. Appreciate her being here. I also want to thank Kristen Rutherford for helping me through. It's been a really difficult last 6 months. I know she said it on this meeting for me back in April, which I appreciate. I've been carrying a lot of my water, a lot more than it looks like, and I certainly appreciate that, and as have a lot of other folks. And so, and for those of you that sent your well wishes via text and phone calls and things, I certainly appreciate that too. So it's good to be up and kind of around, sort of back. I just actually literally got a text that at 7 o'clock, as scheduled, the runway, secondary runway, is back open for operations. So work areas 1 and 2, which is essentially the north end and then the intersection of the runway, have been milled and repaved and are now restriped. And so the secondary runway is open at 7 o'clock on schedule. The entire project is on schedule. And I always hate to say under budget because I feel like that jinxes it, but for the time being, we are actually under budget. Going along really well, really smoothly. We have a fantastic contractor out there. Our program manager from the FAA out of Seattle was here today with me from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock at the end of the project, and actually inspecting our safety areas at the end of all four runways and then all of the safety areas on either side of the runway. He was pleased with what he saw. I thought the project was going really, really well, and said lots of positive feedback, so that was really good. And then I just want to do a reminder for everybody, this will be our last meeting before the B-17s event, August 3rd and 4th. So get that word out. They've got some flyers. If folks can help send out those flyers. They're looking forward to a fantastic event. We've met a lot of new folks that they've hired. We met one the other day, a marketing gal that they brought on board. They've got an actual event organizer now. So that, as we expected, that event since the B-17 started about 3 or 4 years ago has grown every year and really becoming a really robust fly-in now with a really professional level organization. So I'm encouraged. I'm actually a little worried because as it continues to grow, we're going to outgrow parking and some of the other things, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. So we're looking forward to that August 3rd and 4th. Going back to the project, I just wanted a reminder. I've been sending out a lot of emails, but the runway mill and pave will be finished at the end of July, and then both runways will be back open for a 30-day cure period, essentially, but they'll both be operational through the month of August. And then we'll have about a week reclose in September so that they can do the grooving and the final striping. So that's kind of the rest of the project. Other than that, I don't have any other significant updates, but I'm always happy to answer any questions anybody has or updates that you would like.
Well, we'll have a couple. I have a couple other things in a minute. Where are we on the business plan? We haven't heard anything about that in a long time.
I'll take that one. That's because we had a staffing change, and the person that was in charge of that took a position in another community. And so we are regrouping and doing some reallocation. We have planned on starting the interviews with everybody this summer. But because of that change, it just didn't work out. And the staff that is being reallocated to this has been really involved in the water crisis. So we're looking, starting end of August, getting new bodies assigned to that work.
Okay. Neil, you wanted to talk a little bit about emergency plan meetings that we've had.
We've had three meetings since our last Airport Advisory Commission meeting, and the notes are provided anywhere between 6 and 9 pages. So I am not going to get down into the weeds, but just some of the synopsis or the high points of those. First of all, as of the 16th, FEMA has announced that they will do an airport assessment for Salem, and we're kind of looking at June of 2019. The control tower has been seismically upgraded, so of course all this airport emergency preparedness committee is addressing ramifications of what happens after the earthquakes of Cascadia subduction zone. So, as I said, the tower has been seismically upgraded. However, the tower's generators are there for fire suppression, and they don't operate the tower radio, so that's one of the projects that the committee is addressing. The 121st STS Squadron out of Portland will probably be doing the assessment of the airport after the shaking stops. And they have to do the assessment, or somebody like the 125th out of Portland will have to do an assessment before C-130s are allowed to land here for disaster relief. John is coordinating with Greg Walsh, our new Salem Airport, Salem Emergency Manager, to secure radios, so we'll be able to communicate back and forth with the city to identify our needs and operational plans. We are submitting MOUs, Memorandum of Understanding, with different businesses, the first three out of the block, and this is done by John and his office to coordinate with the city to have those MOUs. Would be the Flight Deck Restaurant to respond to taking care of disaster relief workers, outdoor fence to make sure the security of the airport perimeter fence and gates remain intact. And also Jerry Trimble Helicopters out of McMinnville, will dedicate at least 1, 4, or 5-place helicopter so that there are going to be personnel, for example, that will have to be ferried back and forth that don't live in close proximity. That may include the airport administrator, it may include members of the 125th STS out of Portland to assess. And the MOU is to identify that they will be here until after the shaking stops, until such time as that aircraft is no longer needed. The county is working with Pape over here on Turner Road for material handling equipment. Ed Flick is primarily responsible for that. We're also working with the Oregon Department of Energy for fuel allocations to include diesel fuel, MoGas, and AvGas will be allocated through OEM, Office of Emergency Management. The City of Salem Public Works has prioritized clearing Mission Street from the freeway to the hospital as a priority one, and then priority two is to clear that same route from the I-5 corridor to the Salem Airport, and priority three is to clear and repair Salem Airport runways. We are working the problem with the electrical for the fuel pumps here on the airport, and that has to be something that goes between the city and private parties or private businesses to make sure that the fuel that we have can be pumped out, because we're anticipating no electrical services after the shaking stops. The briefing on how the airport via the City of Salem and Marion County will be coordinating disaster relief with OEM and the Air National Guard. That was accomplished at our last July meeting with Major Lee, with the representing the Oregon National Guard and Joint Operations Center, and he's the Deputy Director of Military Support, and also with Scott Lucas of OEM, Search and Rescue Coordinator, to identify how those agencies are going to coordinate with the City of Salem and the county to accomplish our disaster relief. So that's what we've done the last 3 months, and Darcy now has a copy of the minutes going back to November, so that if we want to get down into the weeds more than this report, they can go to Darcy.
I might also point out too, Neil mentioned the FEMA assessment that's being planned. We're also scheduled to have a Department of Homeland Security assessment. A separate assessment, might be some overlap, but we're actually gonna have two assessments this year, both of which I think are gonna be around September, October timeframe. So there's actually some federal money and some federal wheels that are turning now and actually getting us some data, some information, and some recommendations for improvements and those sorts of things. So those reports will be 12 to 18 months after the assessments. So we can expect those probably in the spring of 2019, as I understand it. Yeah. But that's really, really good news. There's actually, so we're second behind Redmond in terms of the FEMA assessment. That's a big deal. I think DHS has got six airports now, we're one of those six. And so I'm very excited about that.
Our August meeting will be Clint
Fellow.
Fellow, thank you very much, Spencer. He will be here and to identify to us, John Walsh from ODA, and Greg Walsh from the City of Salem, how we can tap into that $5 million of House Bill 2687. And of course, that is going to be the entire state, but you know, we want to get our fair share, and we want to find out how to best work that system so that we're, you know, we would be at the top of the list.
I'll explain why I know what I'm about to say. It's not only because I'm an attorney, but I also worked in Marion County Emergency Management for over a year. With regard to the MOUs that you're going to put in place with private businesses, if the city wants to foot the bill for that, that's cool. If you guys ever thought about getting reimbursement from FEMA after a disaster, you have to have your council look at the FEMA public assistance reimbursement requirements, because those MOUs are going to go out the window. This has to be publicly offered, just like anything else the city procures. And if the city turns around and says, hey, we got a $15,000 bill from Jerry Trimble, please pay us back, FEMA will probably give you the money, but in 20 or 30 years, they might come back and audit you and say, oh, I'm sorry, you didn't follow the public assistance reimbursement requirements. That's in the book this thick. That makes no sense at all. So if you wanted me to talk to city council about that, it's a specialty area I'm familiar with.
I did mention to Neil, it's not as easy as I just sign MOUs and we put them in the book.
It'd be nice, and it's only a problem if you want to get the federal dollars, and we would.
So we'll talk more about the details of that.
Okay, so you and Spencer can address that issue?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You can learn me. Thank you. There's a lot going on in that work group, so if that's not evident, there's a lot of activity in there. So.
Any more questions for John and his report? Or?
Oh, yeah, we're still on the
report. Okay. So we're done with reports. We don't have any action items. And is there any other items that we want to discuss as a commission? Anything else that anybody wants to bring up?
Nothing.
Okay, Airport Users Group, we've pretty well covered everything that they've been working on lately, so I don't need to rehash that. If there's nothing else, we can adjourn. Anything else before we adjourn the meeting? Okay, so we're going to adjourn the meeting at 7:25, and we're planning on meeting again Monday at 4. Okay, so meeting's adjourned.
Where's your cap?
I don't have a
cap. If you like to bang the hammer, I couldn't remember if you did or didn't.
It's fun.
Neil, you said this would be half an hour, man. Come on, buddy. You guys ever cater this?
No, thing? I said 45 minutes.
Catering's expensive. I don't have that kind of money in the budget. That user group, they have a long list of sponsors. Brett, thank you very much for coming up. I appreciate all of you. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'm going to sign out. Yeah. Sign out on the signing sheet.